Morning. Today's Daf and Baba Basra is Nun Aleph. We're going to begin today on Nun Amud Beis. We're going to start again at the two dots right in the middle of the Amud. A man cannot make a chazaka on his wife's property. Wife's going to go into marriage with property, as we've noted time and again. There are two ways that a property can be rolled into the marriage. One is called Nechsei Belug, and the other is Nechsei Tzom Barazel. Nechsei Tzom Barazel is not really our topic of discussion. Nechsei Tzom Barazel really is his. It's a dowry that her father put into the marriage, and that dowry is assessed. Sorry, the property is assessed in terms of its value. That value is going to be written to the ksuva. And basically, it's the husband's, and the husband's will do with the property whatever he wants. If the property appreciates, depreciates, doesn't matter upon death or divorce, he's going to pay back either him or his estate. It depends on whether it's death or divorce. Either way, they're going to pay back the assessed value as it was written in the ksuva. When a wife goes into a marriage and she has property, it's called nechsei melug. So nechsei melug is really her property. Now he has an entitlement to payros; so he can eat the fruit of that property. The Mishnah says that when the husband is sitting on her property over the course of the marriage, he can't create a chazaka. Now the reason why, as we've already said a number of times, is because that's marriage. Meaning marriage is that she has property and he's going to be sitting on the property. And because that's marriage, so there's no reason for her to protest why she's going to sit there and say, oh, that property doesn't really belong to you. I know you're my husband. But that property doesn't really belong to you. We know that. In other words, that's the context of marriage. So much like the aris, like the sharecropper. We know he's a sharecropper. That's what he's doing on the property. Here as well, we understand that he's going to be on the property. So therefore, he cannot create a chazaka. Now the Gemara says, I'm only bothered by the following, which it's not small detail, and that is a statement made by Rav. And Rav says, that a wife has to protest. In other words, if somebody's occupying her property, so she has to make a macha. And obviously, in the absence of a machav, she doesn't make a protest. So then that means that the property is going to be given over to whoever's been occupying that property. So she has to protest. So this goes against our Mishnah, because our Mishnah says that a husband cannot make a chazak on the property. And so it seems like Rav is going against our Mishnah. Now, Biman. So we already did this yesterday, but okay, we're starting at the beginning of the sugya. So Biman, Elam Aba'achir, if we're talking about where somebody else is occupying a property, so the Gemara says, Va'amarav, Eimach Zikim Nechzei Shazish. Well, the Gemara says, well, if you are not the husband, but you're another man and you're sitting on the property and you're doing so for 3 years, so you cannot make a chazaka. Why not? So the Gemara doesn't say it, but the Rashi explains because the wife is really counting on her husband. Meaning, being that the husband is entitled to the payros, and being that they're married, so she's expecting the husband to take care of it. So why didn't she protest? Not because she's surrendering the property, but simply because she was counting on her husband. She thought her husband was taking care of it. Apparently he wasn't, but in other words, that's why she didn't protest. And that's why her silence is not acquiescence. So the Gemara says, well, so we're not talking about Achir. So we're talking about Allah Babal. So we're talking about the husband. The husband is now sitting on his wife's property, and Rav says she has to make a macha. Well, that goes against our Mishnah. Because our Mishnah says that a husband cannot create a cheskas gemel shanim on property. And so what we have now is, well, seemingly, a stirah between a Mishnah and a comment by Rav. So Amar Rav, so the Gemara now is going to give a couple of suggestions. Number one, says the Gemara, Amar Rav, lo lam babal. Yeah, yes, we're talking about the husband, a kugon shechafer ba'bar and shechad amaros. And what the husband did is he's making a mess of the property. He's digging holes in the property. He's unearthing some of the ground. And now, yes, under normal circumstances, our Mishnah is right. And that a husband cannot create a chazaka just by sitting on his wife's property. But if he's not just sitting on the property, but he's digging holes in the property, so then there's an expectation where she's going to protest. And if she doesn't, so her silence is going to be acquiescence. And therefore, he's going to make a kinyan. Does that take place immediately? Do we need 3 years for that? Seems like from the Gemara, and we'll make the point pretty clear in just a moment, it seems like from the Gemara it's immediate. Meaning if I'm unearthing person's property and he looks there and he just watches me do that and he doesn't balk, that's a strange silence. That's a very loud silence. So the Gemara says, V'amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Barvu, Ein Chazak L'Nizakin. So the Gemara says, what about the comment by Rav Nachman that we saw back in the second parak of the Masechta, which is that there is no Chazak when it comes to damaging. Now at face value, what that means is that if I damage somebody's property, that doesn't create a Chazak. The Gemara says, Eima Ein Din Chazak L'Nizakin. So the Gemara says, no. There are a couple of ways to interpret his statement. One is that when I'm damaging someone's property, we don't need the three-year term that we normally need in order to, for me to become an owner. Meaning 3 years is only when I occupy the property and I handle the, I treat the property properly. But if I'm damaging someone's property, so then the chazaka could be created right away. That's one way to understand the statement, and therefore it doesn't go against Rav whatsoever. Or the Gemara says, or maybe the statement is to be understood in a totally different context, and quite frankly, the way we interpreted it back in the second parak, which is Rav Mari Amar B'Kutra Rav Zvid Amar B'Beis. It's not talking about creating ownership, it's talking about usage. I'm on my property, you're on your property, and you decided to put a bathroom on your property right up against my property. So I'll say to you, look, I know it's been there for 3 years. I know it's been there for 5 years. I've had enough. Now, under normal circumstances, we say, look, hishtamshus, I've been using it all this time, right over here. In other words, and you haven't said anything. So generally speaking, that's a fair argument. But when it comes to things which are really noxious, like a bathroom, like kutra, like a furnace, with billowing smoke, so there, even if I tolerate it all these years, I can still tell you, hey, you know what? Ein chazak al nizakin. Enough already. Move it. So the and it has nothing to do with ownership. It has to do with ishtamshus. So the Gemara says, so Rav Nachman's statement really doesn't affect us whatsoever. Okay, so let's recap. Where do we stand right now? We have a stereo between the Mishnah and a comment by Rav. The Mishnah says that a husband cannot make a chazak on his wife's property. Rav says she does have to protest. Those statements are not in alignment with one another. So right now, our first answer, and the one given by Rava, is that under normal circumstances, a wife doesn't have to protest. Her husband's not going to make a kinyan, cheskes kimol shanim. But rather, in the event that the husband is digging up the ground, so under those circumstances, she has to protest. And if she doesn't protest, so then she is ceding the land. Okay. Answer number two of the Gemara is Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef Amar Lo Olam Ba'Acher. Let's go back to what we rejected in the beginning of the whole sugya. When we say that she needs to protest, it's not against her husband, because she never has to protest against her husband. But rather, we're talking about Acher, we're talking about an outsider. An outsider now is occupying her property. Now, we said already she doesn't need to protest because she's assuming her husband's taking care of it. And we're not budging from that point. That argument is a very solid argument. What we're going to say now is that the acher, the outsider, the non-husband, is sitting on the property, not only while she was married, but also while she was a widow as well. And the Gemara gives the following ukimta. Ukigom. Sha'achla mixas chazaka b'chaye habal. So this outsider has been sitting on the property before she became widowed. And then, for whatever number of years. And quite frankly, it doesn't matter. Because, again, while she's married, she never needed to protest. She had a husband. And then, Vishal Shalacha Misa Sabal. And now, in addition to that, he also continued to occupy the land for 3 years after she becomes a widow. So now, for 3 years, she didn't have a husband, and the person now continues to be on the property. So this is really a hamshacha. This is a continuation. To which the Gemara says, Migudi bai amar lei, anas vita minach, ki amar lei nami az levinte lei uzvana ni alei mehman. So the Gemara says, well, let's go over his argument that he could have made. Right? The rock solid argument. Which is, I've been on this property for 3 years, since you've been a widow, and I bought the property from you. Meaning, you're the owner, and when you became a widow, you were the sole owner. Meaning, unlike when you were married, where we divided the land, you have the guf hadavar, your husband has the peros. But in other words, but since you've been a widow, you've been the owner of the land, and I could say, I bought it from you. Where's your documentation? It's been 3 years. Like we said, since the beginning of the parak. If you've been on the land for 3 years, and now a person wants your documentation, you're not expected to hold it for more than 3 years. He could have made that argument, and that is a rock solid argument. So the Gemara says, so since he could have made that argument, so we're going to believe him on a much weaker argument. What's the weaker argument? Well, here's what happened. What happened was, is that, really, I bought it from your husband before he died. And, well, how did he get it? Well, you sold it to him. So you sold him the property, and I bought it from you, and that's a really weak argument. And the Rashbam spends a lot of time in the bottom of the Talmud explaining why it's such a weak argument. I'll just say it succinctly. I'll try to. It's a weak argument because, generally speaking, that's not the nature of the relationship between husband and wife. Husband doesn't normally buy the property of his wife over the course of the marriage, although that will be a big discussion over today's daf. But generally speaking, that doesn't happen. So now his argument is I bought it from your husband. Now I know you weren't there for that sale, and I'm arguing that your husband bought it from you, which is very unlikely. In other words, that argument is extraordinarily weak. And on its own, it normally doesn't stand. But Migu, since he could have made the argument, I bought it from you, which is There's nothing to challenge that argument with, meaning I understand the Migos are built on an argument which may or may not be true. But in other words, but he could have made that argument, and since he could have made that argument, so he's going to be believed on the much weaker argument of, I bought it from the husband, who in turn bought it from you, before he died. Yeah.
Couldn't you say, I never sold it to you?
Yeah, in other words...
He came over here.
Huh?
For the Migo.
Well, in other words, right now, we don't have, nor do we need documentation. Because remember, now it's been 3 years since the husband died. Mm-hmm. That he's been staying on the property. So right now, there's the only thing left now is Tina. In other words, he just needs just some sort of explanation of what he's doing here. Now, it has to, like we discussed earlier, it has to be legitimate. It has to be a good taina. In other words, like the Gemara said earlier, he can't just simply say, hey, I've been here. In other words, he has to explain why he's the owner. So the explanation of him being the owner, which is, I bought it from you, that's a rock-solid explanation. Okay, he didn't say that. He said something which was not as rock solid. But again, the Gemara here introduces us to another Migu. He could have said, I bought it from you. And since he now gives a much more implausible explanation of, I bought it from the husband, who in turn bought it from you, before he died. So it doesn't matter. In other words, he has now a Taina, and he has Gimel Shanim, and therefore now he becomes the owner. Okay. Adkan. All right, so that takes us really to the... what we've done now is we've made a comment by... We've learned together a comment by Rav that a woman has to protest. We were bothered by the fact that... What about our Mishnah saying that the husband can never make a cheskes gimel shanim kinyan on a property? So the Gemara says, basically has two mahalchim, two approaches. One is Rav and the other one is Rav Yosef. Rav says that we're talking about where the husband is making a mess of the property, he's digging holes in the property, where there, under normal circumstances, she should not protest. She doesn't need to protest, but here she does. And if she doesn't, so then she's ceding over the land. And Rav Yosef's explanation is, no, we're not talking about the husband. We're talking about an outsider, and we're talking about it. And Rav is talking about in a very specific ukimta, which is that he sat on the property while the husband was alive another 3 years after he died. And even if he gives a not such a solid explanation in terms of how he became the owner, we have a taina, we have Gimel Shanim, he now acquires the land. Gufa. Yes.
Are we saying Nezek is a proprietary act? Because an outsider would look at that and say, that's not a proprietary act. Why automatically...
Correct. But what is he... in other words, if there's an owner, he's just watching somebody else destroy his property?
Right. But that doesn't mean he gets to own the land. It's like the trespasser.
No, right. But generally speaking, if somebody's trespassing and you're there, so you're going to say something.
Right.
Right. That's what makes this a slightly unusual. Gufa. You started, we're on the bottom of Nun Amud Beis. So a person cannot make a chazaka on his wife's property. V'dayana gola amar machzikin. So, and the Dayana Gola is an expression. And as Rashman points out over here, it's a reference to two specific Amoraim in Bavel, Shmuel, and Karna. So Dayana Gola say, no, you can create a chazaka. Amarav halacha ke Dayana Gola. So they go, now Rav makes a statement, he says, you know, that's a halacha. That a husband can make a chazaka on his wife's property. So Amarle Rav, or I shouldn't say the husband. Somebody, that's better, because I know what's coming up. Somebody can be making a chazaka on a wife's property. So Amrle Rav Kahana Rav Asil Rav Hadamar Mishmaite. So the Talmidim of Rav said to Rav, well, how did you just do that? How did you just pasca like Dayana Gola, who say that a person can create a chazaka on a wife's property? We learned together, you also agreed, that a person cannot make a chazaka on a wife's property. So the Gemara says, Amr Lehu Mistabra, Amr Kedir Rav Yosef. So the Gemara says, yeah, you're right. Under normal circumstances, you're right. An outsider cannot make a chazaka on a wife's property. Because again, why didn't she protest? Because she was counting on her husband. When do I say that an outsider can make a chazaka on a wife's property? Working with the Ukimta of Rav Yosef that we did just before. Meaning that he was on the property before she was a widow, and then 3 years after she becomes a widow, and under those circumstances, so he can make a chazaka. Okay. Okay, we're on Nun Aleph, Amud Aleph. We are now continuing, and we're going in the other direction. A woman... with her husband's property, cannot make a chazaka. So in other words, it's her husband's property. So, and unlike in the other direction, where when it was her property, so he had peiros. So therefore, he had every right to be there. So here it's the other direction. It's the husband's property, which means that really it's his property both in Guf and in Peiros, and she's there. And she can't create a kinyan cheskas gemoshanim. So the Gemara says, pshita. But the Gemara says, but we, quite frankly, that's obvious. Why? Because kevin dislay mezona mezona hu deka achlei. Because let's remind each other. A husband must support his wife. And if a husband is obligated to support his wife, so that means that by law, she's entitled to go onto the field, take fruit. In other words, it's part of her entitlement of mezonos. So she's there because she has every right to be there. Now, because she has every right to be there, so of course she can't make a kinyan chazaka. Because why is she there? The answer is because she has the right to be there. But because she has the right to be there, she can't say 10 years from now, 20 years from now, you know, I've been occupying this property. No, you haven't been occupying the property. You're entitled to be here. You should be here. So the Gemara says, really, it's pashut. If you think about it, it's obvious. And again, we're back to the question of what is the Mishnah taught us that, quite frankly, it's not much of a chiddush. So I'm sorry, the Gemara says, so the Gemara injects a chiddush into the Mishnah. She is getting fed. And what the husband did is he already set aside another field for her mezonos. And so now this is not her primary source of mezonos, this particular field. And now she's been sitting on this field now for 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. And now, havamina would have been that she's making a kinyan chazak. What about the fact of mezonos? She had another field designated for her mezonos. Okay, fine. So the Gemara says that's the chiddush that we're going to insert into our Mishnah. Very good. Ha'raya yesh. Now, interesting. So and we made this point earlier in this just a couple days ago in the daf, and we're going to make the same point again. By virtue of the fact that we're having a discussion of whether she can make kinyan cheskes gimel shanim or she can't, here would seem to indicate the following. For occupying the land for 3 years, she's not going to make a kinyan. But what if she's holding a document in her hand that says that her husband sold her the property? Is she going to be believed? Would a husband sell his property to his wife? Now, can he sell a property to his wife? I mean, yeah. In other words, right? Unlike the relationship between an owner and an adon and an eved, mashikan eved kanarabo. So he has no ability to acquire, but a wife has an ability to acquire. So can he sell her the property? So the answer is yeah, he can. Would he sell her the property? That's what we're going to be discussing now over the course of, for a good part of today's daf. It sounds like from our Mishnah that if she's holding a document saying, you know, my husband sold me the property. So it sounds like we're going to honor the document. So the Gemara says, but wait one second. It could be that the only reason why he wrote up Ishtar Mechira and waved it to his wife, not just waved it to his wife, we'll go even one step further. He gave it to his wife is only because he was suspicious. You know, I give her an allowance, I give her money, and you know she has access to, basically, she has access to my account, she knows where I keep everything. You know, I'm wondering, is she skimming a little bit off the top? I'm suspicious. And so I know this doesn't speak to the healthiest marriage, but I'm wondering now, says the husband, is there a chance, is there a possibility that maybe she's hoarding some money? So here's what I'll do. I'll basically try to lure her to show me the money. And so what he's doing now is he's holding up the Shtar Mecher and he's saying, here, let me sell you a property. So would you mind, not mind, I'm sorry. And if you want to buy the property, so you're going to have to show me the money. Let's see the money. So Lema Lugluya Zuzuhu Dabai. So the Gemara says now, it's an interesting argument. In fact, what the Gemara is now saying is that it's more than interesting. It may even be a compelling argument. It's such a strong argument that maybe we can even disregard the Shtar Mecher because of this argument of maybe he did all this just to basically lure her to show him the money. Okay? So the Gemara says, Shama mina mocher sadalishto kanta v'larmina legluya zuzuhu debaye. So the Gemara says, but if our diyuk and the Mishnah is right, where a woman can't make a cheskes gimel shanim against her husband, But if she shows a Shar Mechira, she would in fact be the owner. So it certainly seems like, even though it's an argument that he's just doing this to lure her to reveal the money, but it sounds like if we're reading the Mishnah correctly, we're basically rejecting the argument. And that if in fact she holds up a Shtar Mechira, we're going to honor the Shtar Mechir. So the Gemara says, "Law." The Gemara says, okay, but we don't have to say that, and we don't have to make the diuk. The Gemara says that, yes, she can show proof of ownership, but only if she was given a Shtar Matana. Meaning if the husband gifted over the property to her and wrote that up in a document. Now the Gemara says, now the assumption over here is as follows. The Shtar Mechir was done because, like the argument we're giving, he's just doing it in order to lure her to show the money. But if it's Shtar Matana, we don't have that argument anymore. He's not getting anything as a Matana. So why is he giving her a Matana? Because he actually wants to give her the property. I'm the Rav Nachman, the Rav Huna. Okay, so we are in the middle of the Gemara's discussion right now regarding whether or not a husband would sell property to his wife. Can he? The answer, of course, is yes. Would he? So right now we are equivocating as to whether or not a husband would in fact sell his wife property. Gifting? The Gemara says yes, he would. That for sure he would do. So the Gemara says, the Gemara now has a discussion, a dialogue. I'm like Rav Nachman le Rav Huna. So Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna, Lo hava mar gaban b'orta b'tchuma. You weren't with us within tchum. Darmina mila malyasa. We had a great discussion in the Beis Medrash. And where were you? You weren't there in the Beis Medrash. Now it's an interesting way to describe the Beis Medrash as saying tchum. What does that mean? The Rashbam over here explains. They did not centrally locate the Beis Medrash. We are blessed. We live in a community where the shul is in the center of the community. But physically, I'm talking about geographically. There used to be a minhag, and the Rashbam over here writes. Sorry.
The Beis Medrash built a few places, different places in the middle of it.
Okay. Sorry. I lost it. I had it and I lost it. Where'd the Rashbam go? Oh, there it is. Okay. Sorry, it's in the middle of the Amud. Okay, sorry. I even have it underlined. That's great. Okay, B'tchuma. Ba'atei Midrasha Shalem B'sofa Tchum Haya. It used to be back in the good old days that the Tchum was outside the Beis Medrash. I'm sorry. Oh, I love that hour change. Okay, so the Beis Medrash was not outside the Tchum. Right, that's not the right way to say it, but really on the edge of the Tchum. So Ba'atei Midrasha Shalem B'sofa Tchum Haya. So it was at the edge of Tchum, meaning we know there's the idea of Tchum Shabbos. You're not allowed to walk 2,000 amas outside the city limits. So where did they put the Beis Medrash? They situated it right at the edge of Tchum. Kidesh yuchul lavosham b'Shabbos min hayarosh shemisaviv. And why would they do that? So apparently they had a number of cities that were far away from each other, so that the Beis Medrash was placed outside the city, but at least within Shabbos walking distance of surrounding cities. Okay. That used to be a minhag back then. That's why the Beis Medrash was called Tchum. Okay, anyway. Okay, so here we had a discussion between Rav Nachman and Rav Huna. First, Rav Nachman chastised Rav Huna. You didn't come to the Beis Medrash last night, and you missed a great discussion. So Amarle Maimilim Alias Amrisa. Okay, you piqued my interest. So now let's go. Let's go over with me what happened in the Beis Medrash. What do we talk about? So Rav Nachman says, So the discussion was, and you know, of course, the discussion is contextually what we're discussing right now, which is that a husband not only can, but would sell a property to his wife. And if he sells the property to his wife, and he writes up a Shtar Mechir, so the sale is going to be a validated sale. We're going to honor the Shtar Mechir. And we're not going to make this argument of, well, he only wrote up the Shtar Mechir because he was suspicious that his wife was hoarding money, and therefore he wanted to test to see whether or not she in fact is hoarding any money. And he did this all as a ruse to just simply have her show him the money. So the Gemara says we don't accept that argument. We reject that argument, and we say that if in fact she has the Shtar Mecher saying that her husband sold her the property, we're honoring the Shtar Mecher. So I'm.
He gets the money. From
huh?
It's supposed to be his. The money's supposed to be his.
Right. So he's suspecting that she's.
No, understand that I'm saying to you, but it's still a Shtar Mecher. So basically, what he's saying, I'm gifted because the money is really mine. You know,
no.
Gives is his.
Basically, what we're saying that the Shtar Mecher for him was just a lure. It's nothing. Meaning, what if you accept this argument of Lugluye?
We don't say.
No, I understand that. But in other words, if we were to say it, then the Shtar Mecher would have been a zero.
Right. That we don't say it.
Right.
But how did she pay with what kind of money? It's not him. The money
she earned it. She earned it.
Yeah, but that's what if she earns is his.
No. That Masha. No. Masha kind of Evid kind of Rabo. That's by an Evid Rav relationship. And a woman earns. And like we said a couple days ago, her Maisi Adayim. You're right. No, you're right. The Maisi Adayim go to her husband, but she can also say to the husband, "You'll keep your Mazonos. I'll keep my Maisi Adayim." Right. There are numerous ways that a woman could have money. It's more than possible. So the Gemara says, okay, so that's what Rav Nachman says. That's the discussion you missed last night in the Beis Medrash, and you should have been there. So Rav Huna says, Pshita. The Gemara, so Rav Huna says, come on. In other words, I'll insert. Maybe you're right. Maybe I should have been the Beis Medrash last night. but it's obvious. So Dal Zuzim Achav Tiktim Bishtara. And Rav Huna says, and not only is it obvious, but let me ask you a simple question. Even if there was no money transferred between the wife and the husband, did he write up a document? The answer is yes. Did he give her the document? The answer is yes. So even if there was no money in the exchange, so she's going to acquire the property through just simply the shtar itself. Milo Tanam, we go back to the Mishnah Kedushin. Don't you remember the Mishnah Kedushin? In other words, how do you acquire land? So one of the three ways to acquire land is shtar. So even if there was no money transferred between the woman to the husband, she acquired the property through shtar. Amar Leis, so Rav Nachman says back to Rav Huna, V'lavit Marlam or Shmuel, Lo Shana B'Shtar Matana. No. When does shtar work by itself? Shtar works by itself when it's a shtar matana, where there is nothing good that's going to be exchanged for the shtar. Then the shtar works by itself. But if it's a shtar mecher, so shtar mecher is not a vehicle in which it's going to create the transfer. The shtar mecher is just there to prove the transfer. How does the transfer actually occur? If it's a mecher, the answer, of course, is money. Meaning the seller is obviously selling it because he's going to get a financial remuneration. So that's why he's selling the property. It has nothing to do with the shtar. The shtar is a raya. The shtar is proof to the sale. But the shtar is not the vehicle that creates the sale. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. Let's slow down on that point. V'lav Mosef Rav Hamanuna, the Gemara says, but what about Rav Hamanuna? B'shtar Ketzad. How does a person create a kinyan with a shtar? Kasav lo ala niyar o lacheres afa pishen bo shavar puta. Sade mechura lach sade kenuya lacharizim mechura nesuna. So the Gemara says, yeah, but what about the Braisa that tells us if you want to create a kinyan with a shtar, and here the wording is clear, it's either going to be a shtar mecher or it's going to be a shtar matana. So then you write on it any kind of document, and when we say document, it doesn't even have to be a piece of paper, it could be a shard. You're going to write down on the document that the sale is valid or the gift is valid, and that's going to actually create a kinyan. So now it seems pretty clear that a shtar works for both matana and for mecher. You were trying to make the argument that if it's for a mecher, the shtar is not the vehicle that creates the kinyan, it's the money that creates the kinyan. But that's not true. The shtar creates the kinyan, the Braisa says it. Now Rav Hamanuna quoted the Braisa, but then Rav Hamanuna said, but you know what, I could sidestep the Braisa. How am I going to sidestep the Braisa? He's selling because it's a distress sale. Under normal circumstances, when I sell a property and it's not a distress sale, so I'm doing so only for the money. And what creates a kinyan? It's not going to be the shtar. It's going to be the money. So that's what happens under normal circumstances. But if it's mei rasa, but if he's selling it because it's such because he's so distressed and he's so desperate for money, so he wants the kinyan to work. Meaning, I need the sale to happen. under those circumstances, so then the shtar would work by itself even without the money. Now it's kind of interesting, by the way. He's so desperate for money, so don't you think that
he's willing to wait.
Right. In other words, exactly. That's exactly the point. Right. That's exactly the point. Meaning that because he's so desperate for money, that right now, in other words, let's make the kinyan happen. Right. Let's make it happen right now. As far as money, he owes me, obviously, and I'll collect the money. Under those circumstances, the shtar works by itself. But if it's a relaxed, and there's no such thing. But if it's a relaxed sale, if it's a regular sale, so then the shtar by itself does not work. That's what Rav Amnuna suggests. So therefore, where do we stand right now? So again, the base medrash, the conversation, the base medrash that Rav Huna missed out on was a question of whether or not a husband would sell his property to his wife. They said in the base medrash, yes, he would. And we don't accept this argument of he's just using the shtar mecher as a lure so that she'll show him the money. We don't accept that argument. And to which now the Gemara is discussed, saying, well, if we wrote up a document, isn't the document by itself going to create a kinyan? And right now the Gemara is saying, no, under most circumstances, no. If it's a sale, if it's a distress sale, so then yes. But under normal circumstances, no. Rav Ashi is also going to address the same question, meaning the Braisa. The Braisa gives the indication that the shtar by itself creates a kinyan. Rav Ashi says, b'matana, that really what the Braisa is describing is a gift, not a sale. Now, I know the Braisa uses the language of sale, but that don't take that language literally. B'matana b'kesh litna lo, yes, the Braisa did use the language of Mecher, but he only used the language of Mecher in order to strengthen the gift. Meaning really, what the Braisa was describing was a gift. And the document was there to ratify that I'm gifting you a property. And the reason why I'm using the language of Mecher is just to strengthen the language. Well, how does it strengthen the language? It's very simple. The Rashbam writes over here. I'm paraphrasing. because if it were just a sale, and along came one of my creditors who had a lien on the property and took the land away from the giftee, so where does the giftee stand right now? Without a property. And he has no recourse because he didn't pay for the property. If, however, in the document you wrote the language of both gift and sale, even though it wasn't a sale, but once you use the language of sale, so basically what the gifter is saying to the giftee is, you have recourse. In the event that the land is taken away from you, you can come back to me. Now, talk about an unbelievable gift. When not only is the gifter gifting the land over to the giftee, but also personal responsibility in the event that the land is taken away, that's a serious gift. But that's why he's writing the language of Mecher in. Okay. And
that's what I was thinking in the beginning. Uh-huh. That he knows that the money that his wife is really his.
Right.
But he writes it as a Mecher. Uh-huh. But it's really
okay.
A gift. And basically,
fine.
That's what I was thinking.
Okay, fine. So the Gemara said, okay. So that's where we stand right now. So where are we in the Gemara? Basically, we are supportive of the statement that when a husband sells his property to his wife and he writes up a shtar mecher, we honor it. We don't accept the argument, when I say we, meaning Rav Nachman, as we'll see others argue, but we don't accept this argument of he's just writing this because he's suspicious that his wife is hoarding money and he's just trying to lure her to show him the money. We don't accept that argument. That's where we stand right now in the Gemara, Meisvei. The Gemara challenge is based on the following: Braisa lova mina eved v'shichrero, mina isha v'girsha. Let's say a husband was to lend money to his eved. That's an unusual business relationship.
Borrowed money.
Huh? I'm sorry. He borrowed. Right. Thank you. That's correct. Okay. Excellent correction. He borrowed money from his eved. Or let's say the husband borrowed money from his wife, okay, and the relationship and both come to an end. He frees his eved, divorces his wife, ain lahen alav klum. So, even though the two of them are holding loan documents, and they go back and they say, no, it's time to pay. So, they don't have to honor the loan documents. Wow. Why should that be? My time, huh? It demands an explanation. So the Gemara says, clearly, there can only be one reason why we're disregarding a loan document. I mean, where else do we have this idea that you're disregarding a loan document? That's an unbelievable chiddush. But over here, we're going to say it. And why are we going to say it? It must be because the argument which we didn't buy into over the course of most of the Amud, we're obviously buying into right now, which is the argument of he only wrote up the loan document because he was suspicious that his wife or his Eved was hoarding money. And he was just giving the loan document. In other words, he was borrowing money because he wanted to see, like, how much money does she have? Or how much money does my Eved have? And that's the only reason why he wrote up the loan document. So the argument of Ligluye Zuzehu David clearly is the explanation of this brisa. So as much as we wanted to reject the argument earlier in the Samud, but how else are you going to understand the brisa?
An Eved cannot have his own money?
An Eved cannot have his own money, but he's suspicious that he's hoarding money. So he's gonna. So again, it's a ruse. He's quote unquote borrowing the money. He wants to see what is Eved, what kind of money is Eved has.
Yeah, but Eved could have hoarded it in order to buy his freedom.
No, in terms of the purchasing of his freedom, somebody sponsored him. Meaning, but. Don't look from the point of borrowing. Come now at a point where they're holding up the shtar against. She's holding up the shtar against her ex-husband. The Eved is holding up the shtar halva against his ex-owner.
Obviously, they never gave him the money.
Right. Correct. Correct. And what we are now arguing is that he just wrote it up in order to lure him to show lure her to show the money.
Okay, but the way it says love and
I understand that, but
he said he borrowed it. He didn't borrow it.
Okay, understood. But we're just explaining how can we ignore a shtar halva? Okay, so the Gemara says Shani Hasam Delonicha LeLishav Nashay Eved Love Lishmave. So the Gemara says, okay, we're talking about a loan right now. Who likes borrowing money? The answer, of course, is nobody. People only borrow money because they have to. And you know what happens when you borrow money? The Gemara quotes the pasuk in Mishlei, Eved Love Lishmave. When you borrow money, you become a slave to the lender. That's just simply the nature of the relationship. And so, to the question of, is a person really going to want to borrow money? No. Again, life happens and they're going to have to borrow money, but nobody wants to borrow money. So if we have another explanation in terms of why it is somebody is a lender against him, and it is a plausible explanation, so we're going to go with the ulterior explanation rather than the simple explanation of he actually borrowed money. So in the relationship between a husband and wife, in the relationship between an Adon and an Eved, since there's a possibility that he only wrote up the Shtar Hava because Ligluye Zuzihu David, he just wants to try to lure them from showing the money that he suspects that they're skimming. So we're going to take that over him actually borrowing money, because you know when you're a borrower, okay, but when it comes to a mecher, no, in other words, to be a seller, that's not demoralizing. You're not demoralized when you're a seller. You sell because you're going to get a financial remuneration. So there, what's the other explanation? The most probable explanation is that you actually sold it. And if she's holding a shtar mecher, so you have to honor the shtar mecher. So the Gemara sent the following letter. A man sells his property to his wife, so she acquires it. Ubal ochel peiros. Okay, good. We're going to honor the sale. We're going to assume that he actually sold it to his wife. But now that his wife has property, you know what that property is in the context of marriage? It's nechzei malug. So because it's nechzei malug, so therefore, the husband now, even after he sold the property to his wife, so she owns the principal, she owns the title, she owns the guf hakarka, but of course he's now able to eat peiros. Now Barim, however, and we're going to read the Gemara like the Rashbam. If you take a look at the second Tosfos on the Amud, so Rabbeinu Tam does not like this, he doesn't like the Girsi, he doesn't like this reading, but for partial disclosure, I'm only reading the Gemara like the Rashbam. Barim, however, Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Abba, v'chol gadolei ador amru b'matana bikesh litna la They say that when the husband sells the property to his wife, really the truth of the matter is it's not even a sale, it's a gift. And because it's a gift, what does that mean? It means that A, the gift is registered, meaning the gift is going to go through. She now is the owner of the property, and it also means one other thing. He's not entitled to the peros. Why? So the Rashbam over here explains, because it's one line of Rashbam that I'm reading. Because when you are gift-giving, so that means that you're obviously in a very generous disposition. You gift because you want the person to have it and all of it. So when the husband is gifting a property to his wife, what he essentially is saying is, not only am I gifting you the property, but the peros as well. In other words, you have everything. Okay. I know we've done this already, but let's do this again. So why did he write it up as a sale if in fact it's a gift? To strengthen her position. Again, we go back to what we said earlier this morning. If it's a gift, there's no recourse. If it's a sale, there is recourse. And so therefore, it's a gift, but he calls it a sale so that in the event that it's taken away from her, so therefore, she'll have recourse. Meitzvah, the Gemara is going to challenge. Now, this Braisa we quoted all of 5 minutes ago. But this is a new discussion between Nuam Arayim, says the Rashbam, and therefore the Gemara is going to go over the same sequence of Q&A. Meitzvah, the Gemara challenges from a Braisa, love him, and Aviv v'shichro, you borrowed money. I was about to make that same mistake. You borrowed money from your Evan, and then you released him. Meneisha v'girsha, you borrowed money from your wife, and then you freed her. And then you divorced her. So, ein lahan alav klum. So even though they're holding a note against you, but you don't have to honor the note. So So the reason is because the only reason why you wrote it up is because you wanted to lure them to show you the money that you think they're hoarding. So the Gemara says, Shani Hasam de lo lishrei inish evad lo v'lish mava. And again, the Gemara says, yeah, but that's different because that's a loan. And nobody wants to borrow money, and therefore we're going to seek another explanation in terms of why you quote-unquote borrowed money from them. Over here, when we're talking about a sale, or especially a gift, so there, we don't have that same ulterior explanation, and so therefore, the sale's a sale, the gift's a gift. Okay. Amarav. More on this topic of discussion. Rav says, Amokha sadali isho kanta v'abal ocha peros. B'matana kanta v'inabal ocha peros. The statement of Rav is that when a husband sells his wife to his property, so that the sale is going to be honored. She is going to acquire the property. And furthermore, in terms of the peros, if it's a sale, husband is going to enjoy the peros of the land. If it's a matan, if it's a gift, so then like the Rashbam explained earlier, we assume that he's gifting her the property and he is also removing himself from the peros of the land. Everything goes to the wife, both the land and the peros. Rebbe Lazar, Amar Echad Zevechad Zekanta Vein Abal Ochel Peros. Rebbe Lazar is of the opinion that in both cases, he acquires and the husband does not eat the peros. Okay? That part's a little bit tricky. That needs an explanation. We're going to explain that in just a moment. Avad Rav Chista Uvda Kareb Elazar. Now Rav Chista, when it came to a question that actually came up, so he paskin the halacha like Rav Elazar. So meaning that it was a sale, and he said that the acquisition goes through, and the husband doesn't get payros. So Gemara says, wait 1 second. Amalei Rabban Ukvav Rab Nechemia b'nei bante derav, or as the Bache as the Girsa b'nei bante derav Chista. So the grandsons of Rav Chista said to their Zeta, l'Rav Chista, Shavik Marava Vevavid Bezutre, meaning, what just happened over here? We had a machlokus between Rav and Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Elazar the Amora. Now Rebbe Elazar the Amora was a student of Rav Yochanan. But in terms of greatness, Rav was greater than Rebbe Elazar. Now, I don't get to say these things, the Gemara does. So Rav was greater than Rebbe Elazar. So in terms of paskining the halacha, they're asking their Zeta. So I don't understand. You went with Rebbe Elazar over that of Rav? That's strange.
So they agree on the sale.
Right. So Rav Chista says, now wait 1 second. I'm also choosing greatness, meaning there's one piece of information he didn't know, which is the Chiyas, the Rav and Amar Rav Yochanan. Rav came in from Eretz Yisrael, and he's quoting Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, and so echad levechazek hantavein abal chaperos. So in both cases, the kinyan takes place. Husband sells the property to his wife. We honor the kinyan. We reject the argument of he's just writing it up to lure her, to show him the money, and it works. And we're also saying husband doesn't get peros. Amar Rav Hilchos Amochis El Ishto Lo Kantav Abal Ocha Peros. Rav is of the opinion that when a husband sells property to his wife, the kinyan does not take place. Meaning, despite the fact that over most of today we rejected the argument of Ligluye Zuzihu David, the Gemara, at least Rav La Halacha, accepts this argument. And so therefore, when the husband sells a property to his wife, she does not acquire it. And then he writes, V'abal ocha peros, and oh, by the way, the husband gets to eat the peros. What? The Gemara says, B'matana, before I ask the question, B'matana kantavein abal ocha peros. Now, if it's a gift, so then we don't have the argument of Ligluye Zuzihu David, it's just a gift, and therefore the gift goes through, and the husband does not eat peros, because when a person gifts, Ba'in Yafeh, who knows saying. In the meantime, however, the first statement of Rava is perplexing. Rava says that when a husband sells his property to his wife, the sale does not go through, because he's just doing it Ligluye Zuzay, and he gets to eat the peros. What? So Tarte? So the Gemara says, I don't understand. How is he eating the peros if there was never a kinyan? So the Gemara says, Okasha. The Gemara says, okay. And with this, we finish the daf. Kam b'maos t'munim, kam b'maos ain't t'munim. So the Gemara says, well, I'll tell you, we are going to accept the argument of Lugluye Zuze, but in limited circumstances. Meaning, if we know she has a stash of money, we just don't know where that money came from. And now she holds up a shtar mecher. You know, he sold me the property. So we say to her, no, he didn't. In other words, you had a stash of money. And he wanted to know, like, what's going on over there? So he just wrote up the shtar mecher because he wanted to know the nature of your maos t'munim. But if she did not have a stash of money, in other words, everything was transparent. And all of her assets were totally transparent. And he sells her the property, then we're going to honor the sale. And then we're also saying that the husband's entitled to eat the peros. Damar of Yehuda, maos t'munim, lo kanta, maos shena t'munim kanta. So the Gemara basically, at the end of the day, does to a limited degree accept the argument of Ligluye maos hu da'avid. Meaning, if there is reasons of suspicion, the woman does have an account. Now, you're not with her husband, not together with her husband's name. And there's clearly something that she's hiding. I know that statement is like an oxymoron. If it's something she's hiding, it's not that clear. Okay, but I'll try to say it anyway. If clearly there's something she's hiding, if there's reasons to be suspicious, so then if he were to write up a shtar mecher, we don't honor it because if, however, there's a perfectly transparent relationship and we know exactly her accounts and there's nothing suspicious, and then he sells her the property, we honor the sale. And as far as Allah is concerned, and he also gets to eat the pears as well.